Okay, welcome back everybody. I think we've lost a few people to lunch, but I'm sure they'll join us as soon as they're able. We're going to close off our day with the ever-popular panel discussion, which this time is on the subject of registry principles. And I'm delighted to hand over to Keith to chair that session. Just as a trailer, though, at the end of the session, some of you will remember we promised you gadgets if you filled in the CCNSO survey. So just to encourage you to stay for the entire session, at the end we will be giving out the gadgets if you filled in the survey. If you didn't fill in the survey, you don't get a gadget. So we're going to need to rely on you. We have ways of knowing you filled in the survey. It's okay. We're relying on your honesty, Ranulf. So, without further ado, let me hand over to Keith.
Thank you, Leslie, and good afternoon, everybody. And I see there's a couple of strange faces in the room. So my name's Keith Davidson, if I haven't met you before. This afternoon's session, the panel discussion, is on TLD principles. And I introduced the topic in a very brief session during ICANN Prague and asked for a show of cards, and there was a sea of green wanting a greater bit of information and discussion on the idea of these principles. So just recapping, you know, Internet NZ developed a framework of seven principles that it believes to be relevant to the way we would operate our TLD and may be applicable to other TLDs. This is not an attempt to assert that our principles are always right and always applicable everywhere. It's just merely that we have been through a process and developed them. So today we have a panel who will be giving us a look at their sets of principles as well, and we'll see what levels of alignment there are, and perhaps out of it we may find that we're missing some aspects or there are some gaps in our principles. So it should be an interesting and lively session in that regard. For us, we found our TLD principles quite useful in evaluating whether or not we would participate in applying for new GTLDs, with our principles on things like first come, first served, and some of the ICANN restrictions over GTLDs. We felt that was too inconsistent for us to apply, and so on. So we have, in a nutshell, seven principles. They are: one, that domain name markets should be competitive; two, choice for registrants should be maintained and expanded; three, domain name registrations should be first come, first served; four, parties to domain registrations should be on a level playing field; five, registrant data should be public; six, registrar operations within a TLD should be split; and seven, TLD policy should be determined by open multi-stakeholder processes. So I guess as a matter of record, you know, principles should be enduring and remain relevant and applicable across environmental changes. There may be occasions where principles come into conflict with each other, which might require consideration of their application in those specific circumstances. I think Internet NZ developed its principles in a semi-open and transparent, semi-consensus-based way. But certainly stakeholders who had strong interest had their say, and that ended up with us dropping a couple of principles because we couldn't achieve consensus on them. So we ended up with our seven. Anyway, this afternoon we have our moderator, Byron Holland, who has found time in his otherwise hectic schedule as the host of the meeting here in Toronto. And again, our thanks for hosting us here. But Byron, would you like to introduce our panel? And I'll just merely sit and chair and call order and timeliness if necessary. So over to you, Byron. Thank you.
Okay, well, welcome, everybody. After lunch, hopefully this will be a lively discussion, recognizing that it is just after lunch. And I know that between Keith and Leslie, literally, I will definitely be kept on time. We had some challenges with the sound this morning. Everybody good? Everybody hear me in the back? Okay. Well, I'm just going to very briefly introduce everybody, and then I'm going to ask each and every one to just let us know, in terms of principles, in their own environments, very quickly, do they have principles, or are they without principles, principle-less? And just how did they get there? Some perhaps through legislation, some through a consultative process, but just a very quick overview of where you're at. So we have a range of folks here from a range of registries, although we're pretty well represented by .nz, I think. But we have Demi, and please, if I pronounce this incorrectly, let me know. I know you will. Getchko from .br, Matthew Vile from .fr, Lise Fuhr from DK, our illustrious chairman from NZ, Annabeth Lang from .no, Debbie Monahan and Jay Daly from NZ, and Roloff Meyer from .nl. So maybe just going from left to right, if you could give us an idea about whether you have principles or not.
Yeah, we have some principles, I hope. How Byron said, I am involved with a registry in Brazil, the .br. It's a quite old registry since 89, when we began to register names. We have some specificities that are different for other registries. Maybe we can discuss some of them in the middle of the panel. But, of course, we also think that some of the principles has to be common to all the registries. And I suppose we will take advantage of this and discuss during the panel. Thank you.
Thank you, Byron. Under .fr, as some of you may have heard this morning, we have some pretty extensive regulation, including a specific domain name act, where a number of principles are embedded. And they include first come, first served. They include the principle that registration rules are open, transparent, non-discriminatory, that registries may not be registrars, vertical separation is among those principles, and that registries or registrars actually cannot cancel or block a domain name unless certain configurations appear, including legal action and so on. So those are just examples of the principles we have, and our specificity compared to .nz is definitely that it's in the law. It's something we have contributed to in the elaboration of the text, but it's not within our control. It's not an AFNIC design document. It's embedded into the regulation of our country.
Well, yes, I'm representing DK Hostmaster.dk. We're also heavily regulated, and Well, most of our regulation is about principles because it's a framework regulation where we have to fill in the blanks about the registration of the domain name. But we do have to represent the Danish internet community, and that has to apply to private users, professional users, and suppliers. We do have to be nonprofit. And we do have to be very transparent. So we're trying to fill out these principles. And we do have some other principles that we put in ourselves, but that really does make a lot for our government structure that we have this formed in the regulation.
Thanks, Lise Annabeth.
Hello. In Norway, we are also regulated in a way, but a little more lightweight than in Denmark. So some of the principles we live after are in the law or in that framework regulation, like cost effectiveness, the non-discriminatory transparency, and those things that Matthew mentioned as well. And but then we had to fill in with some more that we have in our management plans and in our vision and strategy that we thought were lost in that regulation, so we really wanted to have it even more principled. So, and these principles has been, even the framework was out on a hearing and asked all the stakeholders in Norway to come with suggestions. And when we do some changes in our policy, we ask a little dependent on how important that change is, whether it's a full hearing out to the multi-stakeholder society, or we have a policy board that we ask for advice representing the stakeholder groups in the country.
Thanks, Annabeth. Maybe, Debbie, I could just get you to speak to NZ's position, and maybe if you could also just articulate the structure of NZ so people get a sense of why there's so many of you up there.
Yeah. Actually, that's true. What I was going to say is .NZ is run by Internet NZ with two subsidiaries, essentially, and so why there's three up here is that the Internet NZ principles that resulted in this session, all three entities actually sign up to. So the Domain Name Commission, which I head, which is the policy and regulatory or business of Internet NZ, Jay heads the registry, and we're two fully owned subsidiaries for Internet NZ. So when Internet NZ was developing these principles, they not only consulted with us, they consulted with their membership. And so this is actually something that the members and the two subsidiaries have actually signed up to. And they do reflect how we actually operate and our CCTLD and the policy framework we have within the CCTLD. So these actually document, if you like, the approach that we take to our policy setting and how we actually, if you like, operate our CC.
Keith, did you want to jump in for a sec?
Just to elaborate a little bit further. So the perspective from .NZ today is I'm not from .NZ. I'm just here to chair. Debbie's here as the regulator for .NZ, and Jay's here as the registry operator for .NZ. So I think it's often quite interesting to get the comparison of the difference of view and using principles from those two different perspectives.
Are you suggesting a regulator and an operator have different perspectives?
Occasionally.
Okay. Maybe we'll get the operator in shortly, but first let's go to Roloff.
Yeah, thanks, Byron. We definitely have principles at SIDN. And you also asked the question, then where did they come from? I think quite a few already stem from RFCs, like RFC 1591. I think also quite a few come from what this sector concluded to be best practices. So first come, first serve is something which is in the RFC, more or less, but is also something that's widely adopted, I think, by most registries. An example of principles that we established more recently are our governance principles. So we have an independent supervisory board, for instance, and that is quite a few of our principles. We have also, let's say, guaranteed their continuous existence because we've incorporated them in the covenant that we bullied our government to sign with us. So some are technical, quite a few are economic, so we're not for profit, but we still want to make a positive result every year so that we can use that money for reinvestments or for research or for any other relevant good purpose. And we quite a few of the principles that .nz uses, I think we would subscribe to. Quite a few we wouldn't, by the way, because they are not in line with our policies or values. We have also corporate values, which is, I think, quite similar to principles. But we haven't, like .nz has done, we haven't listed them all together. And I think that's quite a good idea. If we would, I think we would have slightly more. But then we might conglomerate quite a few of them, I think.
Thanks very much. And as we go through here, I would be interested when each of the participants next speak, if you could actually just tell us, we all have principles, but are they crisply and clearly articulated in one place where everybody can see them and read them and you can be held accountable to them? So just, yes, we have principles, but are they easy to find? Are they written down and are they clear? I would be interested in hearing that. But maybe before we go there, can I get one of the .nz folks to talk to us? Let's just go back a step. Why did you do this? How did you get started going, you know what, we need a clearly articulated set of high-level principles to guide us? Just take us back to the why.
Sure. We have traditionally made friends in the CCTLD community around things such as information sharing, being at similar levels of maturity within an organisation, even common language, or things like that. And I think that we realised that as we were moving into a new phase of TLDs, with the introduction of new GTLDs, it was going to be more important for us to find something stronger that we had in common with people that would enable us to work as one to influence the future direction of ICANN. Us all being country codes is a nice community, but many of us do things very differently. And there are some things that other country codes do aren't necessarily things that we would accept within New Zealand. And so Debbie and I very much asked for these principles to be drawn up, or a process to go through for these principles to be produced, so that we had something that codified the way that we worked and the strengths about the way that we worked and the things that we thought were fundamental the way that we worked, that we could share with others and start this conversation going with others about what really matters, why do we do things, and with the hope then that this will then move forward into the rest of ICANN. I think that we all know that when we look at ICANN and its processes, there is a distinct lack of principles driving things. That's not to say they don't have principles somewhere down there, but very rarely does anybody go back and refer to those. And so you look at something like the GNSO Who Is debate that I think has been going on for about 75 years now. Had they had principles and agreed principles up front, they might possibly have solved that. And I think that because we do have principles and have developed them, we can contribute best to the ICANN debate through those principles.
So that's interesting. That's a fairly lofty goal. Did I hear right that one of the reasons that you developed them was to hopefully start to influence the entire ICANN process? Interesting. Let's drill down on that a little bit. In terms of how you got to the principles, we certainly understand that you put it out to the community. Could you give us a sense of how you got to these principles? What was the process? And therefore, how do you know you got the right ones?
Can I respond to that, Byron?
No, you're the chair. You're not allowed to talk anymore.
Okay. I'm not the chair for this particular occasion. I'm a person of many hats, or at least I probably should wear a hat with a hairline like mine. I was actually contracted by Internet NZ to develop the principles along with Jordan Carter, who some people will remember from .nz. We used initially RFC 1591 as our base, just interestingly, Roloff was talking about 1591, and I think one of the principles that we dragged from that was concerns about rights and ownership of domains are not appropriate, you know, and that was one principle that didn't get through our process for some reason, and I still really don't understand why you would oppose that. But anyway, so we were contracted to go through a process, so we consulted with the three parts of Internet NZ, the society that has the .nz delegation, the regulator and the registry, out to our members, out to some key stakeholders who we knew would have strong opinions. In year 2000, we had a commissioning of a report for our registry, which we refer to as the Hine Report, which a professor at our Wellington University had created, which was the principles for the creation of the registry and the regulator functions for our model. And that provided us with guiding principles. So it was a question of developing and finessing those broadly captured policy guideline and principles and codifying them as if they were principles and then testing them against our stakeholders, and going through several iterations and several last-minute iterations and resolving. We've just been through the same process for a set of policy principles as well. So this is our set of TLD principles. We also have another set. And I can see us developing probably other sets of principles along the way.
So that's interesting. So what policy areas do they guide, and do the set that you've shared with us, they don't guide one of the parts of the business, or the other part of the business has a whole separate set?
The Internet NZ, the society, participates in a range of debates that are and on a range of issues that are probably more aligned to ISOC issues, so broader than the CCTLD by a very long way. So if it came to us creating a submission on, say, copyright law in New Zealand, we would use the policy principles to guide us in that, you know, that, and that might be that termination of internet access is not appropriate as a penalty for copyright infringement or something along those lines. So using the principles as they're applicable. But I think that's a little bit off the subject of the TLD principle, so maybe we shouldn't dwell on that, and that might be a topic for a...
I agree with that, and that's what I'm trying to understand is how how each of the parts of the organization would use the principles, and do they all use the same?
So the policy principles that Keith has just spoken about are actually Internet NZ's policy principles. The TLD principles are ones that we all signed up to. Now, the general intent behind Internet NZ's policy principles, we, of course, agree with, but that's not what I use when setting policy for the .nz space. The TLD principles are more on the side of me developing my policy, along with a policy development process, which is actually one of our policies. So we come at it from that perspective, and that policy actually says that we'll go out for public consultation. And that policy actually brings in a lot of the principles that are actually in here. So the policy principles Keith spoke about in that setting are actually Internet NZ's.
Okay. I think I understand that, maybe. Demi, maybe we could pick up with you. I know you had a short presentation, a couple of slides, and maybe we could pick up on what's going on in VR in a little more depth.
Okay. First of all, I want to explain that we have a separation between two different bodies in Brazil. We have the Brazilian Internet Steering Committee, that is a committee composed by 21 members that represents different stakeholders in the process. We have 9 members from the government, and we have other 12 elected members that composes this steering committee. The steering committee delegates to the NIC-BR the operation of a lot of services, including, of course, the registration under .BR. And as we have a surplus of money, we have to apply this in other initiatives on the internet. But just to frame the question, since 2008 we began to discuss a set of principles for the internet that also reflects in principles for the Brazilian CCTLD. Because of the pressure of new laws that are trying to pass in the Congress, and these laws can represent a threat to the internet in a good faith. The legislators always want to have things in the right way, but in many cases they don't understand exactly what they are doing when they propose are proposing some new laws. Then the steering committee spent 1.5 years discussing principles, and we elaborated in 2009 a set of 10 commandments, the 10 principles of the steering committee, and some of them are really in some way related to what the CC has to do, or how will be the liability of the value string in the whole internet. For example, it was important to stress that one of the principles says that the network is not guilty of the things that happens over the internet, because in many cases we had decisions in courts that ordered to take off some services because of some bad things that there. For example, YouTube was choose it to be offline for 2 days because of some videos that can be considered damaging for reputations and so. Then we tried to set up a set of principles that tries to defend or to protect the internet itself. The principles are the 10 principles that the steering committee has released in 2009. For example, the net neutrality is number 6, the net unaccountability is the number 7, and this relates more or less to the CC operations also. The next slide is about what we are talking right now. I suppose we can divide the principles for CCs in two sets. One is general principles that may be applied to every CC. Of course, it depends on discussion. And the other part is the principles that are very specific on BR. BR has some very different specificities in some kind. For example, we think in .BR that first come first served is a very general and very important principle for registration. We also have the registrant data public in a very neutral way. What I mean with neutral way is there is no privileged access for some institutions or some legal institutions or that try to get access to data to see if there is a violation of rights or property. We have the same data exposed to everyone. In a way that is public. We think that the policy in each CC has to be defined inside the territory, but a multi-stakeholder process. We think that the process has to be fair. It has to have transparency on the rules. These rules of the steering committee, for example, are in our site since 2009. Yes.
Could I just ask you, just quickly intervene, Who developed the principles?
I mean, the principles, the steering committee, the 21 members of the committee discussing one and a half year. There's a consensus decision.
Okay, so it was a consensus decision within the 21-person steering committee.
Yes.
Outside input from other organizations, or was it strictly
how the representatives of the civil society are elected, we understand that this is a way to have representations of outside organizations.
Okay,
we have
thanks.
Four representatives of third sector, three representatives of academy, three of the industry, and so then, okay. And we think stable and secure operations is very important. We have DNSSEC full deployed, and we think that the collaboration that is the basic of the beginning of the internet has to be strengthened all the time. We have strong collaboration with other CCs for secondaries, for regional training, and so. Then I think these are our principles general. Just to go a little bit forward, the next slide lists some of the principles that are specific for .br. We are open just for Brazilians. This is good or bad, depending on how is the view you take. For example, it's easy to have a resolution in national courts in any case because all the parties are from the same country, under the same law. We are a thick registry. We have all the data inside our registry. And at the same time, we are open in a sense that any provider can act as a registrar. We don't have accredited registrars. We have providers that act as registrars, and we have EPP available for everyone that wants to use EPP. Of course, it has to bear to some conditions and rules, but it's open to everyone. We have the second level closed. We don't have registration in second level, except on some exceptions. And we treat differently the different registrants. For example, we have natural persons that can be professionals or blogs or vlogs or something like that. We have non-for-profit that has to prove that it's non-for-profit. We have enterprises. And we have some sponsored or restricted domains for government, for judiciary, legislative, and for banks. In this case, we impose the use of DNSSEC in the whole tree of these domains to give the users a little bit more safe browsing and safe use of this. We are very constrained in liberation and transfer of domains. This is a quite strange thing. We have paperwork to transfer a domain or to liberate a domain to other users because we are afraid of fraud in these circumstances. For example, if the old administrator is not anymore the administrator of that domain, but he has the password, then he can provide some kind of transfer, then we are very, very old-fashioned in transferring or in liberating domains. And finally, we reluctant many years to have a domain resolution policy. We always send the processes to the judiciary, to the courts. But since 3 years, we delivered a local UDRP that is quite the same of the WIPO. And we are not involved in the process itself. We have three chambers. The litigants can choose any chamber that they want to solve the conflict. We have, until now, we had 12 cases of litigation using UDRP. Then it seems that the weather is quite calm in this area. This is my presentation. Another one slide, if you want, just to
maybe to I'll let somebody else come in
yes.
now. But
okay.
I want to make the observation that it would appear you have done a significant amount of work on principles, and have multiple levels of principles very clearly
okay.
laid out, and we can see it right here. So it's very. I think that's a very interesting distinction between. The very high level, some of the very high level principles, yet you've gone right down into relatively close to operational principles as well.
Yes.
It's a lot of work done. Maybe, Annabeth, can I go to you as I think the only lawyer on the panel, but also have principles that are bound somewhat in regulation and legislation. And if you could tell us a little bit more in depth about where the .no is and the impact there.
.no started actually without any laws at all. So they worked for many years in so-called understanding with the government, with never having talked with them. But then suddenly they found that they needed to have the relationship with the government to be more legitimate. So what started the process was actually to go through the RFC 1591. And it's a red line going through the history of all CCs, actually. It's used the 1591, and it's a lot of principles set there that form the background for many of us. You see that when we discuss today. And then we also took the GAC principles, actually, and they had been made over the RFC 1591, but just deepened a little. So the principles we have in the framework, some of them are there, and they are more the same principles that come from this area that I from the 1591 with transparency and but first come first serve actually does not, it's not there. So that's more a tradition that everyone uses at least after a while because it's scalable, and I think that must be it. In the beginning, I think that a lot of registries, when they are very small, start to do a proper investment. They take the documentation that you send with your application and find out if you have a right. Then you don't have the first come, first serve, actually, not really. But when you have an automatic system and don't check anything, the only way to do it is to have the first come, first serve. But then that leads, in my opinion, to another principle that you have to have, that you also take care of what happens afterwards. So one form of dispute resolution is also baked into our principles. I think that it's a good idea what the .nz has done to really make it very visible for everyone going into the web page of the registry to see what kind of principles do you live after. In Norway, it's some in the framework, it's some in the vision, it's some in the goals, so it's not really easy for people to find, even if we live after them. And the NZ principles we see here that I think they could be good for a lot of us. And it's interesting to make, if we could make some investigation of what all the CCs have of principles, then we could easily see, is it something here that we lack and learn from each other? And that's part of this process, in my view.
It is interesting because, what are the best practices? And this is the first time I've heard that, 1591 was very much responsible for the principles that you have layered on with the GAC principles, which I think is the first time we've sort of really heard that clearly articulated. As a moderator, the technical stuff going on here is making it a challenge. Any idea how much longer you're going to be? Gentlemen? You good? Excellent. Thanks. Lise, is your presentation ready to go? 10 seconds away.
But I can do. You're asking about if we have our principle written down, and actually, in 2008, we made an offer for a tender, and in that offer, we needed to put down the principles of the .dk registry. And then the principles were put into our permission. So you can easily see what the principles are, but you need to go through a lot of reading to find the specific principle because it's entangled in all the other stuff that's also within our permission. And I really get inspired from this session that we should have a one-pager of these are our principles. But... one of our most important principles, apart from being transparent and representing the Danish internet community, is that we are a sole registry, And we've been that since 99. And by being a sole registry, we mean that we have registrars that register our registrants' domain names. But afterwards, we have all the contact with the registrant. And that is because we want to ensure that the registrant has the full control of the domain name. There's no middleman, and they will they can complain to us, and they can transfer. They pay directly to .dk after the second term. So this is one of our most important principles, and that was one of the reasons of that we won the tender in 2009, because a lot of people wanted to keep this system. But we are looking into it all the time, even though it's a very important principle to us, because I think you might think you have a good principle, but the world might change. So we are looking at it all the time to ensure this is a sustainable principle that we should live after. But that's very important to us, and that's very that's our business model. So that makes you're asking about, is this important for how the business operates? It's very much. It's a culture. It's that the registrant is the one who's taking control of a domain name.
And I think you raise a really interesting point. It's one of those things that's so simple, yet often so many of us forget it. If you have a set of principles, are they front and center so people live them? Are they on your homepage, or at least when your staff signs their initial paperwork, are they signing off on the principles? All that sort of basic stuff, but it often gets lost in the shuffle somehow. Mathieu, and I do notice there seems to be a commonality of the Europeans. They all have legislation. Can't get enough legislation in Europe, I guess. Mathieu, let's hear about yours.
Well,
you're Dutch. That's different, right?
I think France is quite well known for its ability to produce more and more legislation and regulation. So I consider ourselves quite in advance in terms of more regulation, but I'm not sure it's positive. So as I was explaining this morning, the regulation itself was quite light until the end of until 2009. But basically, there was this litigation in front of the Constitutional Council that said domain names are getting extremely important for business, for freedom of expression, and therefore, if it's important, there must be principles embedded in the law, because that's our legal system. So what's interesting is that these principles, and what the council said was, and so we have no problem with what AFNIC has been doing so far on this thing, but it's too important. It cannot be left to a registry, even if it's multi-stakeholder or whatever. It has to become a part of the legal system. That has several consequences, including the very significant one that you have to be extremely careful on compliance. It's good to have principles, good to show them on your website, but when it's part of the regulation, then somehow it becomes quite easier to say, well, I have to take them into account. Otherwise, I'm basically taken to court. And there's no internal ombudsman before. So I think one of the aspects that make these principles matter is the way we live them, the way we communicate about them, but also the way we enforce them and we enable and we are accountable to them. This is totally similar with things we hear in this ICANN world very often. How are we going to make ourselves accountable to these principles? For us, it's very simple. It's a matter of whether we want to win this court case or not. If we do not live with the principles that are in the law, someone will come and get us. And we have a number of people in France who have been trying to get us on this in the past, and we know we're being watched. That's a good incentive, extremely good incentive, actually. But the when we are just self-regulating into these principles, I think one aspect that's often forgotten is how we enforce them within our organization and how we make ourselves accountable to these principles. And well, for us now, it's a settled question. But before the regulation was set up in France, I wouldn't say we were very mature on this.
Thanks, Mathieu. Roloff, in your regulation-free environment?
I wanted to react to something you said earlier first, if you allow me. Because you said, you mentioned putting principles on paper so that your colleagues, your employees, read them whenever they sign off, when they join the organization, etc. I think we have to be careful that we don't throw all the principles on just one big heap, because I would call those core values that guide the people who work in the organization. And I wouldn't want every person who works at SIDN to sign off on, we have an indirect registration model, and we are not for profit. So, but I would like them to sign off on we are trustworthy and accountable, and we have the customer as our prime focus, those kind of things. Now, for principles without regulation, of course we have to adhere to the national laws in the Netherlands, so quite a few principles have been taken care of in that aspect. And like I mentioned before, we voluntarily entered into a contract with the Netherlands government, and in that contract we put in a lot of our principles. So, for instance, that our board is independent, that the main aspects of our policy will be formed through an open multi-stakeholder debate, that we have an indirect registration model, that we use the principle of first come, first serve. So it's not so much in regulation of the registry as in legislation and in the fact that we entered into a contract or a covenant, as we would call it.
Thanks very much. Since we've had the opportunity to hear a little more in depth from all of the participants, are there any questions at this point for any of the panelists? Clarification, questions?
I noticed that in two cases, one of the principles is that all registrant data should be public. Have you encountered any problems arising out of that principle in terms of violations of data protection laws or people mining your database to harvest email addresses, or perhaps people trying to find where somebody lives for some illicit purpose or so? Or if somebody would ask for a full copy of all your registrant data for every single every single domain, would you be able to say no if you have a principle that all the data is public?
Lise, and then Demi.
Well, in Denmark, we have as many data public as possible except for the email address, and we took it out, and we have had in some requests for bringing it in and back. We have a phone number. But you can. We have to apply to the data protection law. So if people are protected by other law and are not supposed to have shown their name, they'll be anonymous. So.
Demi?
Yeah, just to make clarification, what is open in .br case is the data of the registrant, not the personal data, including, for example, we don't collect credit card numbers or don't put the address, the physical address of the natural person available, but the name and the number that unifies in a unique way the registrant, we think is good for protection of the registrants themselves. Then we have some mechanisms to not permit the harvesting of the data. We have restrictions of number of queries you can do from some IP, but normally the data is open.
Debbie, did you want to chime in?
I just wanted to clarify the actual principle, because below each of these bullet points is actually an explanation. And what this one actually refers to is a free and publicly available search of the register. So it doesn't specify that all the data has to be available. What it says is you've got to be able to search the register and find the registrant. So the explanation underneath it actually clarifies. That said, we do like Demi, and we've got rate limits and other such things as well to protect it. But we didn't actually specify that all information had to be public. So the data protection stuff is for each registry to actually manage the detail. This is that there should be a free and publicly available search of the register.
Just a point of clarification with Demi. Is there any data that you collect but you don't make available, like, for instance, a postal address or something?
Yes, postal address is not exposed.
But you collect
it. We have to send emails, physical mails in some cases. We have to have paperwork.
Okay, one more follow-up.
Yeah. So number five, we should really read something like register and data should be semi-public.
The problem will be the definition of registered data.
So we'll go to Jay just on this direct.
If I could just add briefly, I think we're using the word registrant in two different ways here. Okay, by registrant, I think those of us who are using it must be public. Is who is the legal entity or the entity that is the registrant? We don't need to know anything more beyond that about them. So we don't mean other data associated with the registrant. We just mean that one thing about the registrant, who the legal entity is.
Well, we've tapped something here because everybody wants to talk. Matthew, I think you had your hand up first, though.
Just to mention, I mean, whose data is mentioned in our regulations, and it's mentioned that it should be subject to the national privacy law. And the conclusion of this, when implementation came through, was that registrant data is, except if the registrant wants it, it's anonymous in the DALIFAR. So that, I think we're touching on a topic, well, of course, there's the WHOIS debate. And the Middle East. Can we do a Middle East peace process for the WHOIS or something? And there's the Article 29 working party letters, very hot topic. But that's typically not, in my opinion, a principle that applies consistently across TLDs. First come, first served. I don't know of any registry who actually works with something else than first come, first served. Registrant data available, public, I think there's a lot of differences, and so it's not the same level of universality of principles.
So without drilling down into privacy, per se, we want to keep it back up at principles. Did anybody else want to follow up? Stay out of the privacy debate, per se, the WHOIS debate. We'll go to Annabeth.
I just wanted to share with you an interesting example. You asked Patricia about could we say no if they ask for the whole database. And they had a case in Sweden now, and it's just at the court case where the tax offices came to the Swedish registry and wanted to have all the WHOIS data to use them to something completely different. And they said no, and they got support from the government. And now it's been a court case on it, and they won.
Good for Danny on that one. Are there any questions, any other questions? Right here, Hong?
I want to go back to the principles. I know for GTLDs, there are many discussion about difference between open GTLDs and private GTLDs. Well, CCTLDs situation is also complex. There are a few CCTLDs that is open for registration, not only for residents within their territory, but also for residents in other territories, right, such as .tv, for example. Even .cn is an open TLD. A foreigner can register in .cn. So I wonder whether this different principle could be applied for these open CC TLDs, or it would be different from these purely territorial CC TLDs.
Demi, you want to take a shot at that?
Just a follow-up question I want also to put to the panel. When we're talking about legislation or regulation over the CC, we have to have in mind that in your country or any part of the world, you can use also the generics. Then I don't understand exactly how the legislation can apply to a CC without prohibiting the use of generics. That is impossible, of course, in case of internet. Then in some case, this be may be an unfair competition or an unfair treatment of the different CCs or TLDs that has the same rule in the internet.
That's a really interesting point, in that in any given jurisdiction, you have access to theoretically all the Gs. Your CC is bound by the laws of the land, and there may be light of day between those two. And what does that mean? Is there an advantage, et cetera? Roloff, you had your hand up. Did you want to say something? No? Maybe we could change tack just a little bit here and think about how principles actually impact the organizations a little more concretely, and maybe Jay, I could go to you on this, since you have well-developed principles and you've been living with them for a little bit. Help us understand how they actually impact you on a daily basis or at an organizational level. How do you live those? What does it look like?
As the registry operator, one of the things we are always looking at is expanding the service we provide to our registrars. We're looking at potentially ways that we increase the monetization of the service that we do, and we're always looking to do things differently, better, expand, grow, those things. And the principles, as a very clear statement of principles, ensure that we know whether the way that we are going is going to be acceptable to the regulator or not. It provides a clear interface between us and the regulator there for their decisions. And it also, to our benefit, means that the regulator cannot take a decision that is outside of those principles as well, because we can argue that. So it provides us a very clear, reasonably unambiguous, external and verifiable mechanism for understanding the acceptability of future changes.
What's the regulator's take on that?
He didn't sound too panicked when he spoke about coming to the regulator. Actually, it's very true, because I spoke before about the consultation we're doing on registrations at the second level. And as part of the decision-making criteria, the principles are actually a key document that my board is actually considering. And it does come into our... We are actually developing the policy and trying to make a decision. They're actually seriously considered about whether we're actually taking ourselves away. And I think the thing is, we're not saying that we can't... If we turn around and we say that principle doesn't apply, then why doesn't it? And is that principle then valid? And I think we're not saying that this is it and this is how it's ever going to stay. It could well be that there might be something that comes along and we realise the natural fact that we've got two principles in conflict in a particular situation and we need to make amendment. But that hasn't happened to date. At the moment, they've stood the test of time. And as Jay says, I mean, I'm a great believer that you need to have a reason for saying no. You need to have a basis rather than just reject something. And the principles are a good guiding document to turn around and say, if we go that path, it's inconsistent with this, or if we go that path, it's likely to result in that further down the line, and we can't tolerate that step. So the first action might be fine, but where it ultimately leads to could be where the problem comes in.
Anybody from the floor want to jump in? And I know, Annabeth, you wanted to say something too in a second. Eric?
Thanks, Byron. Maybe it's a confused question that we'll make, but I am confused. normally the principles are not in the laws, but the laws affect the principle that we can have in the activities of a CCTLD. If I am correct, the unique document that have principles is the RFC 1591, if I am correct. Sometimes the CCTLDs make rules internally more than that appear in the RFC 1591. How is related that new principles or that new rules when appear a specific law in a country that affect directly to the CCTLD? Normally, the country don't have laws about domain names, have law about another issues that affect the domain name. So it's not clear for me where is the level of the principles in the internal laws, or is only the RFC 1591 the unique document of principles?
Does anybody want to tackle that one? Mathieu, waving your hand.
So that's a typical lawyer question. If I understand correctly, you're looking for the legal basis of this. And I think for some of us, there's an explicit legal basis in a domain name law. That's the case for Anabes, that's the case for Lisa and DK, that's the case for .fr. And so that's where the principles are. And then we can rephrase them, but basically that's where they are. And I guess for those who have principles that they have self-elaborated, of course they inspired themselves from existing internal laws, that they make sure they're consistent and they're not infringing on any existing provisions of the law. I would not imagine Davy trying to define a principle that would go against whatever freedom of expression or others. But when it's not explicit, there's an interest in putting forward how you interpret the current framework to apply for your TLD. So that's, as long as you don't have a specific law, I think it's valuable to have these principles. Did I, by any chance, happen to respond to at least 50% of your question?
Annabeth?
I think I can illustrate it by an example that in the framework we have, it's not actually a domain law, Mathieu. It's more like a second level, so it's more soft. But what they put in there was that we should form our policy or terms and conditions after these principles. And two of those principles, especially, are within the same principle. It's a kind of contradiction. So promote the interests of internet users individually and collectively. Sometimes you can't do both at the same time. Promote national interests and take into account the international development in the area. So we were sued not long ago, and the lawyer tried to say, or one of his points was, that our terms and conditions were in contradiction with these principles in the law. So that was treated by the judge, and he said that in practice we know that the different principles often collide. They must be balanced in regard to each other, and some principle will receive greater weight according to the specific rule under consideration. So they have been tried to use that it's not our name policy is not legally based because we haven't done what the law said. So that's also a problem.
Debyang, I'm going to get you in on this, but I would also like you to think about, can you give us an example where something concrete, an issue you were wrestling with at NZ, actually you overlaid the principles on it and it clearly helped you make that decision? Now, I think I heard you earlier say you have yet to have principles come into conflict, but if you had a conflictual situation, maybe with, say, the operator, where you had to go to the principles to help you come to a conclusion.
Well, I've actually got an example from right the early days when we were actually setting up our shared registry system, because one of the principles was that registrars should be equal. There should be no favouritism or everything to registrars. So we have a standard authorisation agreement, and the two biggest telcos joined forces to fight that particular policy position. And the, you know, which, and the policy was formed because of the principles that we actually had. So they went to our Commerce Commission and argued that I was breaching competition law and the Fair Trade Act and various other such things. Now, we won that because our argument was that we were trying to create a fair market, and the way to create a fair market with where registrants and registrars and everybody had their role to play was to actually have a standard agreement and bind all registrars to it. And so we ended up winning that argument with the Commerce Commission. Now, the question would be, what would we have done if the Commerce Commission had then turned around and ruled that we actually had to negotiate separately? The negotiations, of course, in New Zealand have to be done in good faith. But it doesn't mean that you have to move very far necessarily from the position you've got. So we would have found a way of actually doing what we had to do within the law, but trying really hard to keep within our principle of not extending too far to offer unfair advantages to larger registrars over smaller ones. So we have actually kind of done that in that situation. And I suppose in respect of, we haven't yet encountered a situation with the registry where we've actually come into conflict. And I think that's because we're lucky enough that we work closely enough together on our policy development that we've actually solved any issues before it's got that far.
Thanks. Jay, and then maybe just while you're answering, Demi, I'll put you on the spot. Very well developed set of principles. Do you have any examples you could share with us? Jay.
Thank you. I just want to talk about the law as well then. RFC 1591 is something that we all sign up to, but we all actually do things very differently and increasingly differently over time. And I think that proves that RFC 1591 is not enough. We need something beyond that. And that may be one of the drivers that principles that apply to TLDs are being encoded into law in some countries because RFC 1591 is insufficient. By having a set of TLD principles that we have within the regulator and the registry here that are very clear, I think we reduce the chances of any specific legislation that reflects specifically on TLD principles, because we've got them, we've demonstrated them, and they go beyond RSE 1591 into the areas that matter now.
Interesting. So a core set of principles could be argued or articulated in 1591. So that would be sort of the fundamentalist version of what we're signing up for, but you're layering on top a number of extra principles. Are there any thoughts on, is 1591 not enough and we absolutely have to be layering things on top of it in terms of principles? Oh, look, Becky's suddenly looking up. 1591. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the question is at what level you're layering on principles. It doesn't seem to me particularly troublesome that within the context of a specific CCTLD, the community might want to provide additional clarification or other things like that. But as we all know, there's a lot of work going on the just interpreting 1591 at a more broad level. And Keith's up there, so he can actually say this, not me.
Thanks. Demi, do you have a concrete example you could share with us where your principles really impacted how you made the decision or what decision you came to? And have you ever had conflict where your principles helped lead the way?
Well, not exactly an example of how the principles can make the laws better. Maybe they can prevent bad laws to be posed in the Congress or so. Just to give you an example, there was a project of a law project in the Congress, in the Brazilian Congress, that says that any email provider in Brazil has to have identification correct identification of the users of that email. Of course, this will be the death sentence for any provider of email, because you have so much good emails for free with a lot of space and without any questioning about who are you. If you have this kind of law passed, it's just the end of part of the industry of services in the internet. Then, in many cases, the legislators don't have the clear idea of how the things are interlaced and how global is any decision over the internet. One of the things we are trying to do via the principles is to provide some ground to not to have this kind of laws. And then, as a last comment, I suppose we are quite happy not to have a lot of laws in this area, because all that was all the people that was in a hurry to have laws, they made laws that be in some time totally obsolete or not compatible with the technology advance.
Liz?
Well, we want to represent the Danish Internet Society, and when we have an example, we're about to change our terms and conditions. So we send them out for consultation for everyone who's interested, put it out on the website and email people. And the comments we get, we would answer and say, we have taken this into account, or we can't do this because, and we have to explain why. And I think that's a very important part of the transparency and the multi-stakeholder model. If you do something, you have to ask people. And if you don't follow some of the things people say to you, you have to explain why.
Thanks. Roloff, maybe I could go to you, and you touched on it. I said something about, you know, living the principles, and maybe you should, when your staff join, they should be aware of them and sign up for them, and you said maybe, maybe not. Can you talk to us a little bit about how do principles and strategy and values, how do they interact? I mean, principles and values are similar, but they, as you pointed out, can be different. How do strategy, principles, and values interact so that you have an effective organization?
In my opinion, it begins with your strategy. And if you don't have principles in the way you operate, and we've been discussing about them, and values in the way that the individuals in your organization behave, then you will never be able to reach your strategic objectives. So I think the relationship between the three is that the two, the values and the principles, help you realize your strategy. And of course there should be a logical connection between the three. If you want to be a market leader, and then it's really difficult to be that and also be a not-for-profit, for instance. And if you're a not-for-profit and you don't think that it's important that your people are trustworthy and accountable, then also that I think there's a conflict there between values and what we've been discussing about, and between the values and your strategy. So I think they are strongly connected. To serve the third.
To serve the third. Any thoughts on that? Comments? Questions? All right. Any thoughts on that from the rest of the panelists in terms of that interplay? I mean, everybody up there is CEO, COO. You have organizations to run. These are some of the fundamental documents that would underpin how you run and govern yourself. What are your thoughts on the interplay there? And is there one that's paramount? Mathieu?
I really echo Roloff's statement that it starts with the principles and the values. And when these principles are embedded in law, well, and for us, for instance, we are consistently put into competition tenders and so on, the values become one way to demonstrate that you will operate and have people individually behave in a consistent manner with the principles that were set by the government. And so they become one of your main arguments to demonstrate that you are the right person to operate the TLD according to these principles. Whatever your strategy on the other side, which is can be beyond the TLD or within the TLD. And so that's, I think Roelof summed it up really well. These principles, whether explicit or not, and the values are the basis on which you organize, you build your organization, and strategy comes next.
Annabeth?
I agree with that, the point that they act together. And it seems today that the principles we're talking about, according to the name policy and the CCTLD principles, they are quite equal in the way we think. But as for core values and strategy, that can be different from one CC to another. And it's important that when you take big decisions, one good example, and one of the you had in the briefing paper we got was more, how did you think when you decided, should you go into the GTLD market or not? And that has more to do not with the principles for the CCTLDs, but more which values do you have in your company? As Roelof said, it's difficult to be market leader and not-for-profit. Do you want to have one more leg to stand on? And or will it be difficult for the core values of your company to be both a GTLD and a CCTLD? As for Norway, we have a very strict model for the CCTLD. It's just for the Norwegians. It's a quota. It's a roof on what you get. And it's a total different model than the ICANN model for GTLD. So I think that the values we have and the mission we have has to be taken into consideration when you do make these heavy decisions for your company.
Thank you. And what about, you know, at another level, the corporate culture that you have? If we're not-for-profits, if we have altruistic missions, I mean, we operate stuff on the ground, but many of us have a somewhat altruistic side to our organizations. The corporate culture that we want to create that facilitates that, what do you think the interplay there is with setting out principles? And can the principles themselves drive your corporate culture? Jay?
I think Demi's presentation showed this very well. If you have multiple layers of principles, then they work at the different layers that you talked about there. So we are talking currently about TLD operators, TLD managers at this middle level with TLD principles. But when you look at the greater good for the internet and for our countries that we wish to achieve, you're going up a level there, and that's up to the principles of internet governance that Demi showed there, which is the policy principles that we have that Keith referred to earlier. So those are the bigger ones that set the broader picture.
I think that's a good distinction to make again, right? We touched on it already, and using Demi's as the model with, I think, three levels of principles that govern the respective parts of the organization. And depending what it is, now I think they're going to be critical to developing the corporate culture, which in turn will sustain what you're actually trying to achieve. Liz?
Well, I think the principles can't work without the values. They're very important, and they have to, they have to work together. But in my opinion, you have the triangle, as others have said. You have the strategy, you have your values, you have your principles. But where my opinion is that the values and the principles are more sustainable. They should stay for a long time. It's important that the strategy can expand within this. And so I think the interaction between the values and the principles are very important because they're going to be there for a long time. The strategy, of course, it has, but that's going to be a product of the others and the market, of course.
Roelof.
I think they have a big influence, and sometimes they have also an influence that you don't want to have. For instance, if your principle is that you're not for profit and your strategy is diversification and continuation of your organization, so you have to be one of the world's best, those two are not easily to combine, because very often being a not-for-profit brings something in your organization that doesn't make it very responsive, reactive, innovative, and risk-taking. And to be the very best, you have to be just that. So that's sometimes a difficult act to
defer.
Oh, that's funny how you got some hands up with that one. Just being cognizant of the time, we're going to take hopefully a couple of more questions. And one thing I would just like to pose to the audience right now is, and this probably sounds wrong, but who doesn't have principles? And are you thinking about putting some in? And has this conversation changed your opinion at all? So while you think about that, we're going to give Keith a few minutes to consolidate his thoughts as the chair as we move towards the end of the session. Don't worry, we'll get to you.
I think Roloff's comments just now opened the way to another new panel discussion, I suspect. So thank you for that. I disagree. I think it's a challenge, but it's not impossible to be both commercial and have a public purpose and act for your internet community. And a number of us do it in different ways. That's what I heard you were saying.
But did you say you agree or you disagree?
I never agree with you. I disagree. I think it's not impossible. It's a challenge.
I didn't say that. I said it's difficult to combine, not impossible.
I think it's good to combine.
Oh, okay. I'll catch you later.
I think Leslie's right. It's certainly another panel. But I think what Roloff's conveying on, yes, if you're not for profit, then you're not very efficient or whatever, is typically something we need to fight. It's. I know a lot of companies that are totally inefficient. Inefficient. And they survive anyway. And you guys
have to start listening, because I didn't even mention big offices being inefficient or efficient. So I don't know where this is coming from.
And it's not-for-profits are just, and it's, a lot of us are just like companies. We just don't give dividends to our shareholders. Okay, we work like companies, we're efficient as companies, we have private contractors, we have the same regulations, so the same tax system in many cases, but we work for the public benefit. How is that less efficient? It has to be something we promote in our models, that the fact that we're not for profit, it's actually a benefit to the society. But that's another panel.
So I posed a question to the audience. Does anybody want to respond to that? Lack of principles? Going to put in some principles now that you've heard this? Changed your mind after listening to the panel? No? 3:20 on a Wednesday, just waiting for Keith to wrap up? Okay. But Debbie?
Well, you asked the question before, Byron, about whether having principles can change behaviour. And the answer to that is yes. And you see that in a big group like the Internet NZ Council, for example, where new people are voted on and they come in and they want to do things that they want to do and they're inconsistent with the principles that we have. And you rely on those principles and the other people being able to articulate those principles to change that person's approach, behaviour and thinking. And so you can actually see that at the governance bodies when you actually apply the principles up the line.
Thank you very much. And right before we go to Keith, I think you brought up a very interesting point, and I'm going to leave the audience with that, is that do principles survive changes in boards very easily? Or does a new board or whatever the governing body is come in and say, yeah, those were nice, but we're not that interested and we're going to change them? So what's the interplay between new boards and principles? But with that, I'll turn it back to the chairman, Keith, to summarize.
Thank you very much. This has been a fascinating session, and I think just reflecting on the panel and their viewpoints, the reasons for the principles have arisen either through hard law and legislation or through soft law, through the RFC 1591 or GAC principles or other processes, but perhaps that's a reflection of the differing regimes in which we live. And in New Zealand, we have we've had a succession of governments over many, many years that really believe in a light-handed regulatory framework. So usually they'll say to industry, self-regulate, and if you can't, then we will regulate and you won't like it. So please act properly and act reasonably, and we'll stay away from legislating. And so for us, we have a fair incentive in that regard. But for all of that, I think this has been a session where it does encapsulate the idea that there's no one size fits all, and nor should there be, and we should be a reflection of our local internet community, not of the global community necessarily. But there are linkages of commonality between what we have evolved as principles, which is really important. And I'll take up Byron's challenge to the audience and just finish off that these principles do give you a base on which to stand. And I'll remind you all that if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. So with that, I'll draw the session to a close. Please join me in thanking Byron for moderating and the panellists for contributing so positively. Thank you.
We have the technology. Okay, so for those of you that are not in the Asia-Pacific region or European region, you can get coffee, or you could stay for a Q&A session with the council candidates. But we're going to have a break and just swap over for the Q&A session with candidates. There is also the offer of gadgets. If you filled in both day's surveys, or if you are quickly now filling in the survey for day two, there are some gadgets kindly supplied by Sarah at the back of the room for that. After the Q&A session, we're then going to go straight into the council meeting at 4:00. Thank you.